Cape Talk.
Cape Talk.
Call Pippa now
on 021 446 0567.
That is the number to dial if you would like to put a question to our gardening expert today. Cherise Viljoen, horticulturist from Kirstenbosch, is back with us to answer your gardening questions. I am going to ask you please to stick to calling in for now, but unfortunately we've just lost our internet line into the studio, which means I'm not seeing your SMSs, I'm not getting your WhatsApps, I'm not getting your tweets or your emails. So the only option I have right now is to talk to you in person over the phone on 021-446-0567. We're hoping it'll be back up and running very soon so that all the other channels will come through too. But in the meantime, Cherise, always lovely to have you with us and welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Pippa.
We are going to take general gardening questions. So whatever is on your mind this afternoon, you call us on 021-446-0567. Luckily, I do have a few emails that came through before everything fell over that I can start with, Cherise. And in fact, we're going to start with an email that Vera sent earlier in the week, knowing that you were coming in today. Vera is wanting some advice on compost heaps. Cherise, she says, I've been told by a friend that onions and onion peels and citrus peels can't go into them. Is that true?
Well, it's I think, a dilemma a lot of people struggle with. And it is true for worm bins and compost farms with worms in them. That really is no good for them. It's too acidic. It slows down the whole microbial action, and the acidity damages the worms. But if it's a general compost, you're not using a worm bin, it's open air, and you're just turning it every now and again, then absolutely they can go in. But a lot of people who compost will notice that the citrus peels take a long time to break down, and it's better to just chop them a bit finer before you put them in the compost bowl, because they have a longer decomposition process. So not in worm bins, but yes, in open compost bins that are not using worms for decomposition.
Okay, but do chop up first. That's good news. Okay, thank you very much for the feedback, and Vera, good luck with the compost making. Okay, we also heard from Corinne, who has an ice cream bush that is looking very sad, and she says initially it was doing very well. Over the winter, though, it started losing its leaves and looking very, very droopy. It does get full sun for about half of the day. I thought it would bounce back during spring, but that hasn't happened. What could be wrong with Corinne's ice cream bush, Cherise?
I would definitely go have a look at the roots. Funny enough, I've had a similar experience with the one ice cream bush I finally managed to grow in my horrible sand in my garden, and I'm also finding it a bit sulky. And I'm thinking I'm going to move it. It obviously needs to be dug up. It needs a fresh batch of soil. They do like a little bit of richness worked in. And most people are quite hesitant to move things. I'm not quite sure how big hers is, but mine is certainly big enough to dig up entirely. If hers is too big for that, have a little scratch down in the roots. Is it too wet? Is it too dry? Work in some fertilizer. Give it a little TLC. Cut it back a little bit, because November is the windy month. Okay. And sometimes tender shrubs like ice cream bushes can really take a knock. And then possibly once she's done all of that, it'll flush back through the later summer months.
Okay, I'm so glad you mentioned the wind, Cherise, because, I mean, it's been extraordinary. It is the peak. I know I'm married to a windsurfer, so he's in absolute heaven right now because it is howling regularly. Any other advice on general garden maintenance in such windy times?
You really have to do that watering early in the morning, before the wind picks up. There's always a lull early morning or late afternoon, or skip, wait till the next day. Get those mulches on any open soil area. Any open soil just draws all the moisture out. Okay. Think about giving a light prune to those plants that you see are suffering in the wind. They've grown through winter, and now as the wind comes in, their tender growth is being struck by the wind where they weren't before. They've grown up into that area. Possibly think about trimming them back. Think about a windbreak just during November, maybe wrapping it with a bit of shade cloth, temporarily moving a table or a screen if you can. There are lots of little things you can do to protect things from the wind. It does drop down again as soon as December comes along, and we'll be through it. But I just think it's really getting us. I think after the good rains and the plants having been so thirsty, they've all put on some beautiful growth and don't feel quite prepared for the blasting we're getting.
Fair enough. Okay, thanks for the advice. We're going to go to the lines, and Francois, I'm about to come to your call. Just a reminder, our apologies, our entire building is without internet at the moment, which means SMSs are not coming through, WhatsApps are not coming through, emails and tweets are not coming through. We're relying on you to call us today on 021-446-0567. If you have a question, that is exactly what Francois in Somerset West has done. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Pippa. Thank you very much. My question relates to me planting a new section of my garden. I'm very keen on indigenous water-wise plants, something like a fynbos spruitia type plants. But my dilemma is that the area is highly shaded. And as you know, the fynboses love sun. So do we have a suggestion on some indigenous water-wise plants that we can go for in that shaded area?
You'll be surprised, Francois, that buchus don't mind a bit of shade. Two of the buchus, one is the very common confetti bush, will grow in the shade. Fynbos fine-leaved, beautifully scented with this buchu smell of fynbos, and will flower in the shade as well. And another buchu called Agathosma ovata glentana. It actually comes from Glentana on the East Coast. And those two buchus do beautifully. And it'll give you kind of that fynbos feel. And then a couple of the helichrysums, like Helichrysum petiolare, which is the koichut, that lovely soft helichrysum, will also tolerate some shade for you. But you're not going to get ericas and proteas flowering in the shade. They might put up with it for growth, but you'll be missing out on the flowers. So go for the buchus, enjoy the fragrance. At least you're getting the look and feel of what you're wanting.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for the call.
Francois, thanks so much for your call and good luck with the new garden. We're taking more calls on 021-446-0567. Your gardening questions put to Kirstenbosch horticulturist Cherise Viljoen. Cherise, we heard from Lorella in Durbanville, who has a hedge of Kai apples and has apparently found out that they are toxic to other fruit trees near them. Her question is, will they attack my vegetables in the veggie garden in the same way? Firstly, is it correct that Kai apples can be toxic to other fruit trees?
I have never heard that, no. And even associating the word toxic with Kai apple has me blinking because they're delicious. It's not something I even think about, really. So I'll have to actually do some homework on that one. I have grown Kai apple many, many years, and I haven't noticed. It's called allelopathy. The roots of the plant actually exude chemicals to prevent other plants from thriving and growing within that same space. It's a strategy for them. Yeah. And no, I haven't noticed it with Kai apples, often used with hedges. I wonder if she's struggling to grow a particular something nearby that made her think of it. But I could be proved wrong, but to my knowledge, no.
So allelopathy, you said.
Allelopathy.
Allelopathy, that makes sense. So how common is that, Cherise? Do a lot of plants practice allelopathy?
Pine trees, eucalyptus. Probably a lot more indigenous plants, but we only seem to hold it against the exotic alien invasive plants.
Okay.
But they have that strategy to create a little space for themselves. Quite forgivable, I think.
I suppose so. They're carving out their territory and holding on to it, as we humans tend to do as well. So makes some sense. I suppose it's the same. You can't blame an animal for marking its territory. Maybe the trees are doing it in their own way. Okay, Lorella, exactly. So something to think about there. Thanks so much for your question. Okay, another one that came on by email during the week before, luckily before we went to air, was a question from somebody who doesn't want to give their name out, but they'd like to know about the growth rate of the waterberry tree. I'm in Constantia. I've planted two of them, but they are growing much slower than I was expecting.
Until they actually hit water, underground water, they can be quite slow starting off. And as most trees are, sometimes you really expect that push of growth. Just be patient. Often it takes a tree a couple of months or a couple of years to settle in. You will get that growth coming in. They just sometimes need more time to find it. Find the groundwater.
Okay, so be patient. Thank you very much.
And Pippa, I've had a moment now that I'm in front of my computer,
yes.
I never am when I'm in studio, to say that she was quite right. The Kai apple exhibits allelopathy, and it excretes growth inhibitors, exactly as I said, which prevent the occurrence of other plants right next to them.
Okay.
I wouldn't think that more than a meter it would reach for more than a meter. I really haven't had problems growing them in the garden with other plants nearby. So they can't be doing it very strongly.
Okay, so her concern about the veggie garden is probably
might be justified, yep.
Okay, interesting.
So my advice would be, if she wants veggies nearby, to build a raised box and just put that up against the Kai apple hedge.
Okay, that's a good suggestion. Thank you very much. Okay, Lorella, there we go. Thanks very much for raising a very interesting subject for us. I'd never heard of the term allelopathy before, but we've all learned something today. Okay, let's go to Isabel, who called in a few minutes ago from Edgemead and didn't stay on the line, but she did leave her question with my producer. I have a lime tree that has been flowering for 6 years but has not produced a single fruit. What could be the problem?
So often what happens is the blossoms drop. And there's two reasons for that. It's either microelements that are missing, which you can fix with trail mix. The macroelements are the ones the plants need in large quantities, and they need them all the time. Nitrogen, potassium, and, I've gone blank. Phosphorus. There you
yes.
go. And then there are the trace elements that are equally important, the microelements. And not because... You know, micro doesn't mean I'm less important. It just means I'm needed in tiny, tiny quantities, and I'm only needed maybe once a year. So I would definitely recommend getting some trail mix and applying that around the tree, checking that the watering is consistent. It can cause leaf drop, or flower drop, sorry, and the wind. The wind can be blowing those blossoms right off, and if you could provide some protection, you might get some fruit after that.
Well, Nikki is on the line from Noortuk with a question about a lemon tree, and I suspect you might just have answered it, Nikki, but was there more to your question that wasn't covered by what Cherise has just said? Good afternoon.
Yes, sorry, because I missed her conversation. I've had this lemon tree for 3 years. It looks very healthy. It's got lots of leaves on it. You know, really looks pretty, but no lemons, no flowers and no lemons.
And it is in the full sun?
Yes.
Well, again, how regularly are you feeding it?
Well, in the summertime, I water it maybe once a week. Obviously, okay. In the winter time.
So the reason for my question was sometimes if you feed too high nitrogen, it doesn't want to go into flowering. It stays in fruiting. So usually, how old is it?
Well, I've had it 3 years. It was a very young tree when I had it, and it's about 6 foot tall now.
All right. So the usual things are a lack of sun, over-fertilization, too little water, or they're too old. So if you could run through those, and you don't prune it back too much in winter, do you?
No. No.
All right. I think a little bit less of the nitrogen fertilizer. So if you could find a fertilizer with a higher end number, which is the potassium, and that usually encourages flowering. So you want a 315 or a 318. Try give it some of that fertilizer. Try watering again in the week, and I think you will see a little bit more action on your tree.
Good luck, Nikki. Thanks so much for your call. Just a reminder again, unfortunately, the internet is down in our building, so we're not able to see your SMS, WhatsApp, and Twitter and email messages. We are, however, able to take your calls on 021-446-0567. So if you have a question for Cherise, please call us now. Two questions came in during the week around cycads, Cherise. And let me start with Daywood, who says, I've got a huge indigenous cycad in my garden, but the leaves are in the way of my pathway now. When is the best time to transplant it to another spot in my garden?
It would actually be now. In winter, it just gets too wet for them. And in the middle of summer, it's too hot. And if you can remove just maybe one ring of the lower level of leaves. And if he doesn't want to, then rather wait. The plant will show what it needs to shed. Having lost some roots, it's going to lose some shoots. Unless you can get a really decent root ball, which most people can, if you dig gently, and especially if you have very compacted soil, the whole lot will come out in as big a ball of root as possible. And I would do it immediately.
Okay, glad we got your question in then, Daywood. Thanks so much. Now, the second question about cycad was from someone whose cycad is looking a little bit down in the dumps. And he says, I'd like some help revitalizing my cycad. Any advice on food and watering?
Not too much water. And food, just some SeaGrow, nothing too heavy. They're not great feeders. They're very slow growers. So any fertilizer has a huge impact on them. They really are the plant dinosaurs of the world, but generally they don't like to be very wet, well-drained soil. It can be the wind as well. So make sure that the roots are well-drained, give it a little bit of sea grow, quite dilute, and make sure the wind isn't getting it, but it's usually the watering that causes the yellowing.
Okay, good luck to the cycad owners. Right, let's go back to succulents. We took that call earlier from Francois, who was wanting to plant them. We have two people with questions about those that are already in place. Anonymous says, I want to plant succulents in my garden. The soil is very clayey. What time of year must I plant them, and will they be okay in that soil?
They'll actually thank you for it. You know, succulents are adapted to getting very little water, and that's why they store their own. But they do love getting water. It's just a pity because, one wants to be water-wise, you want to save, and so you don't want to give it to them. However, if your soil holds a lot of water, you'll get really beautiful, lush succulents growing, and they are so easy. If you're irrigating your garden any time of year, if you're not, then autumn is best, particularly if you're taking cuttings and just pushing them in, which is what you can do. You don't always have to go buy a rooted bagged plant. Mm-hmm. You can gather cuttings from friends, family, other garden lovers, and just push them into the ground in autumn. If you are irrigating, you have water in your garden and you're doing it responsibly, you could go buy them now in potted bags and plant them directly in the soil.
Okay, then the other succulent question is from somebody whose succulents seem to be shriveling. What have I done and what can I do is the question.
It's quite strange how much of this is around water today, Pippa. Yeah. It's either going to be too much or too little. And one says, well, how can they shrivel if you're giving them lots of water? But their roots can rot if it's too much. And you need to dig into the soil. The question is always there. You always look at them from the top and wonder, scratch our heads, what's going on? But a little dig near the roots will often show you, is it too dry there or is it too wet? A really wrinkly shrivel is too dry.
Okay, a really wrinkly shrivel is too dry, so a less wrinkly shrivel might in fact be too wet. As you say, it seems counterintuitive, Cherise, but thank you for flagging the fact that it could in fact be both of those things. Okay, one last question we can squeeze in, which is from Julie, asking if one should cut back agapanthus.
No, please don't. Not unless they're infected with that nasty worm. The caterpillar that now I can't remember the name, but a listener might have to help me. I want to say bollworm, and that is not correct. But the lily borer, there it comes to me. If it is infected with the lily borer, yes, I recommend cutting them back and treating them with a product called Dipel, which is not a poison. It's a bactericide. It uses bacteria to attack the caterpillar. However, if they are healthy and they are looking good, you're just making it so much hard work for that poor bulb to grow back everything you've chopped off. If it's lush and green, leave it. If it's infected with a pest, yes, cut it back. And if it's brown and looking a bit, you know, they almost go peripheral around the edges. Just remove the leaves that aren't looking great. But don't cut them back regularly every year. Shame. You're just making them work very hard to do well for you.
Okay, Cherise, thank you as always for all the advice. I'm going to squeeze in one quick final reminder to our listeners that right now, Kirsten Bosch is still offering free access during the week for all school kids, and they're writing exams as we speak. Cherise, are you seeing any of them coming in to blow off some steam and rejuvenate at the end of their exam papers?
I was astonished to see two studying under a tree. I would have thought the opposite. They'd be running amok, flinging their school shoes and civvies aside and throwing off those hats and, you know, running. The grass makes kids run at Kirsten Bosch. But there they were, very industriously with their books open under a tree studying, which I thought was lovely, outdoor classroom.
If not, why not? Absolutely. Please remember that that deal is in place right up to the end of exams, which is the 15th of December, and it's from Monday to Friday. Cherise, lovely to have you with us as always. We'll chat again soon.
Thank you.
Cherise Viljoen, Senior Horticulturist at Kirsten Bosch Botanical Gardens.